Hello, and welcome to the Monday, July 28th edition of Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. We've got a great show. We'll find out about Thursday's PEO Whale Watch fundraiser. Want to know what PEO is? Stay tuned and we'll find out. We'll also profile local artist Meredy Davis, get an update on Perseverance Theater's excellent Summerfest at the Jack, and then we'll learn about what's going on with the Mendenhall Glacier Bears. All that and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In New Mexico, people gathered Friday at the Albuquerque Indian Center to rally for peace and remember two homeless men recently killed in the city. Many made posters which expressed their feelings.
I wrote that sign, you know, how many more natives does it take to be murdered before this city snaps that it is a hate crime towards our people? Then another sign I wrote says Diné Pride, which means Navajo pride. Then it says, we will forgive, but we will never forget.
That's Roylyn Trujillo, who says he's lived on the streets before and says violence against homeless native people is not a new problem. He came to the event with his grandkids to teach them tolerance.
The homeless people are like afraid to speak up. They're afraid of the police. It's because, you know, we're afraid of just getting thrown in for no reason, arrested for no reason, and that's why they're afraid to go up to the police and ask for help.
With a hand drum, the U.S. and New Mexico flags, a banner reading Great Spirit Hear Us, and posters in hand, more than 100 people left the Indian Center and marched down the street, including Albuquerque resident Nance Crow.
I am appalled by the violence against people who are homeless, but particularly people who were here first. And I think it's just awful, and I want everyone to know that we should be much more respectful and caring about each other.
The victims beaten to death were identified as Allison Gorman and Key Thompson, both Navajo. Navajo officials recently met with city leaders to address the indigent Native population. City Councilor Ray Garduño marched with the Indian community and says he'd like to see such acts prosecuted as a hate crime.
In this case, certainly should be lifted up as a group that needs to be protected, especially those folks who find themselves away from their homes in a foreign place, although it's theirs to begin with, but make sure that they feel not only comfortable and welcome, but safe, primarily because there is this sense that grows between people, that it's us and them. And that's the worst thing we can foster.
Albuquerque Indian Center President Cayudas Tecumseh agrees that more needs to be done to help the number of homeless Native Americans in Albuquerque who come and go from the city. He says the number is high according to previous surveys.
Indian people tend to be invisible to the public at large, and which is a shame. And that is why we need to continue to have the Albuquerque Indian Center to work with and for Indian people.
A memorial service for the victims was also held over the weekend. Three teenagers have been charged with their murder. Young people from Wisconsin and Minnesota took part in a lacrosse camp on the Fond du Lac Reservation last week. Dan Huckelack reports.
The lacrosse camp teaches team building, good nutritional habits, and athletic skills. It provides campers important life skills and teaches them to make smart decisions after they leave. Sergeant First Class Lawrence Cooper is with the Army National Guard, a supporter of the camp. Cooper stated that he's worked with kids in 21 different countries in his military career, but he particularly enjoyed connecting with the local kids. Lax for Life was conducted in a partnership between the Fond du Lac Band, the Minnesota Swarm Indoor Lacrosse Team, the University of Minnesota, and the Minnesota Army National Guard. For National Native News, I'm Dan Huckelack.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Supported by Sacred Wind Community Connect, providing scholarships and internet training to the Navajo Nation and Pueblo of Laguna in New Mexico. Sacred Wind believes broadband can reinforce Native cultures and offer means for self-determination. SacredWindCommunications.com. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello and welcome back to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. We are live from Alaska's capital city. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Partis, your Monday host, and the weather is raining. It is raining off and on all day today, light and variable, then sometimes quite hard. And then tomorrow, rain, highs around 61, light winds becoming southeast, 10 miles per hour in the afternoon. And tomorrow night, cloudy, chance of rain, lows around 53. Thank you for sharing your afternoon with us. It's 3:06 p.m. And our first guests are Allison Brown and Rosemary Greening. They are here representing PEO, the chapter here in Juneau. And I don't know what PEO is, so let's start there. What is PEO?
PEO, Joan, is a philanthropic education association organization. There are three chapters in Juneau, and there are a total of about 150 members in those three chapters. We are one chapter, Chapter G.
Okay.
The overall organization has about 250,000 members, and
Internationally,
and they give out, or they have given out in the past since they started PEO in 1869, 90,000 educational grants for women.
Wow. So is that the focus? It's an educational organization that gives out scholarships. Is that the main focus, to women only?
Scholarships, financial assistance to women who want to continue their education, who cannot afford to otherwise. There are a number of kinds of scholarships that they have, and five categories actually. And then each chapter here in Juneau also gives scholarships locally outside of the international program, and to UAS and to the high school.
Wow. So you are representatives of Chapter G, is that correct?
Yes.
So what specifically does Chapter G do, and how many members does Chapter G have?
Chapter G has 47 members, and each chapter chooses their educational goals to support, and with all three chapters involved, they each have a different focus.
And the focus of
Chapter G will be, again, the scholarships and people that we become aware of or who we know in the community, either at UAS, at the high school, are promoted or their names are submitted for consideration to receive a scholarship. And also, there are a number of other things that we contribute to. For example, supporting one of the schools with their breakfast program. And we've done that for a number of years, and it'll vary which school. The programs that are funded each year are not necessarily the same, but we try to be alert to whatever is really needed in the community. And often things are suggested to us, or members become aware of opportunities. And I think another thing that we support are the kids that go out to summer camp and supply them with some of the things that they need. And mainly, I think, the focus on the education and the scholarships, and they participate as well at the end of the year at the high school to inform the students about the college that PEO supports, and high school students might be desirous of going to. So it's interesting. It's a very quiet organization in their promotion of the educational scholarships, but it has a fairly wide reach because we do know the community and we are widely represented just through friendships and businesses and work settings. And as an example, years ago I went to UAA to continue my education, and I was approached by a PEO member, and I didn't have a clue what PEO was at the time, and I was offered a scholarship. And that was very wonderful. And the focus at that time, they were seeking women who were single parents who had children and who were trying to further or complete their own education.
That sounds wonderful. So for people to apply or be chosen for the scholarships, it sounds like you have members out there kind of scouring possibilities and probably partnerships with counselors at the high schools and at the university.
Exactly.
And so that sounds great. So this fundraiser on Thursday is an Allen Marine Whale Watch Tour, and it's from 6 to 9 going out of Stater Harbor.
Right.
Allen Marine is a fabulous community partner, so thank you, Allen Marine, for all you do for raising funds.
We have to agree.
That's right. Wonderful.
A wide array of
many people.
Many different organizations. So tickets are $75.
Yes.
And all proceeds go toward this scholarship fund?
Yes, local.
Okay.
Local scholarships for women.
All right.
And
how could people get tickets?
Well, this is unusual. We are not selling them at retail stores. We deliver. So if they call this number, then and say how many tickets you might want, we will deliver those tickets to you.
Okay.
And the number is for Barbara Pavitt at 907-789-9882, 789-9882, or 209-4931.
Okay. And that's for a three-hour tour this Thursday, the 31st. And there's been amazing bubble feeding going on in the area. It's been an amazing show.
Yes. And a lot of orca, too, so we might really see some wonderful things. Last year, we stopped counting the bubble net feeding at 8 different times.
Oh, my gosh.
After 8 different times. And I wanted to say that the $75 includes a 3-course buffet dinner, and it's my understanding that the menu for the entree is chicken adobo or pulled pork.
Sounds wonderful. Yeah. So if somebody's listening, this is a women's group. Is that correct? All your members are women?
Our members are women. This is for everybody. This
I'm going back. I'm moving from the fundraiser. Thank you.
Okay.
Because I segued without any transition. So thank you for helping me. So so that's the Whale Watch Tour. It's a three-hour tour. No Gilligan's Island. It's just right here in our backyard. It should be fantastic. And we'll get to that number one more time. Oh, something else?
I just would like to add one thing, if you don't mind. And that is, if there's anyone who wants a ticket and has difficulty physically boarding the boat because you step over a rail, they have somebody to help you. But somebody who might, for example, be in a wheelchair, if you will let Barbara know at 209-4931, she will inform Allen Marine and give you instructions on how to get to their dock, and they will help you take you down the ramp so there isn't that extra hurdle back at Dawnstatter Dock. So that's at a different location, and you would be boarding half an hour, 45 minutes before the other boat.
Okay.
Or that same boat, excuse me, but at Dawnstatter.
Right. Okay, so that's great.
Thank you.
So if people want to go and they feel that maybe it might be beyond their reach, you could come. There's a way to do that. So also, and there's door prizes and all different types of door prizes. So that sounds fun. So that's the Whale Watch Tour. That's this Thursday, 6 to 9. You have to be there at 5:30 and 3-course meal. All funds go to local scholarships for young women. Question, if somebody's listening and they say, well, that's really a great organization, I'd like to know more, I'd like to donate, I'd like to become part of it, what do they do?
Well, in this instance, because of the venue we are talking to people on right now, I would think the easy thing to do would be to contact Barbara Pavitt with that one number, and she will then refer them or get somebody to call them back.
Okay.
And explain to them.
And that number one more time?
209-4931 or 789-9882.
Okay, and then one last question for PEO Chapter G of Juno. How many scholarships are you hoping to fund this year? I mean, I assume we're looking at the end of next school year. Or maybe even this year, too. Well, we were schools, talking actually. About that just before we came in. And generally, we fund up to what our funds will permit. So what we raise locally will determine how many scholarships that we will offer. And the UAS scholarships generally are in the neighborhood of $2,500. The high school scholarships are in the neighborhood of $2,000. And then we also fund community projects at a level of $1,250. And these numbers will vary according to how much has been raised
available
over
funds.
The course of the year. Available funds.
Okay, I said I had one more question, but I have two more questions. So the high school scholarship, how does that work? What's that for? Like, I understand a college scholarship, that would be, you're going to the university.
Right.
But what about the high school scholarship?
Well, no, the high school scholarship is for somebody just coming out of high school and going on, is my understanding.
Oh, I see.
And
okay.
But there are some people in college now who need assistance to go forward, and so they may
understand. Or even going back is what you're saying.
Or even going back.
Okay.
Continuing
so the high school is for high school age, and then the rest is for people who are already engaged in a program or going back to a program, so on and so forth. And what about the community projects? What do they look like?
It depends. Sometimes we share the pot of $1,250 among different projects. But, for example, we have funded the Imagination Station, which is the reading program for kids from birth to 5 years old, where they get a book per month mailed to them. I'm very sorry, I can't think of the umbrella organization that's under, but most people know it already, but it's a wonderful organization. We also have chosen a family at Christmas time. We discuss this with the Salvation Army and find a family, adults with their children, and we go out shopping and we buy clothing and toys and books and educational things and try to make it very festive. And then they, Salvation Army, delivers it to them.
There have been some food baskets as well.
Food baskets and the one we originally mentioned, I'm sorry.
Oh, the school breakfast program.
Hot breakfast program at schools. And we've actually funded more than one school for a year. So that seems to be one that's ongoing.
And the need is big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and the need is big. All righty. Well, thank you so much for coming in. If you're interested to go on that 3-hour whale watch cruise this Thursday, Alan Marine, it's only $75, and the number is 789-9882 or 209-4931. Thank you for coming in today, and thanks for all you do.
Thank you, Joan.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 28th of July, 2014. It's the birthday of the poet John Ashbery, born Rochester, New York, 1927, grew up on his family's fruit farm near Lake Ontario, went to a small rural school. He was a bright young man and a generous neighbor, seeing that, paid to send him to a good school for his last 2 years of high school, and he started writing poetry. Went on to Harvard, published his first book when he was 29, a book entitled Some Trees. John Ashbery, who said, "I don't quite understand about understanding poetry. I experience poems with pleasure, whether I understand them or not. I'm not quite sure. I don't want to read something I already know or which is going to slide down easily. There has to be some crunch, a certain amount of resilience. John Ashbery, who wrote in his poem At North Farm, "Somewhere, someone is traveling furiously toward you, at incredible speed, traveling day and night, through blizzards and desert heat, across torrents, through narrow passes. But will he know where to find you, recognize you, when he sees you, give you the thing he has for you?" It's the birthday of the poet Gerard Manley Hopkins, born in Stratford near London, 1844, went to a fancy boarding school, wrote poems, he was a painter, went on to Oxford to study the classics, and while he was there, he had a religious conversion. His parents were Anglicans, but the young Hopkins decided to become a Catholic, inspired by John Henry Newman, whose book Apologia Pro Vita Sua was a bestseller while Hopkins was at Oxford. 2 years later, Hopkins decided to become a Jesuit priest, and he began his training. He burned all of his poems, said he was giving up poetry, didn't write at all for 7 years until 1875, when a German passenger ship, the SS Deutschland, sank in a storm. 75 passengers died, including 5 Franciscan nuns who were escaping harsh anti-Catholic laws. And he wrote a long poem, The Wreck of the Deutschland. And now that he saw poetry as a way to express his faith, he started writing again. In the year he was ordained as a priest, 1877, he wrote some of his best-known poems, including The Windhover, As Kingfishers Catch Fire, Dragonflies Draw Flame. And he wrote God's Grandeur, the famous poem that begins, "The world is charged with the grandeur of God." He went through desperate hard times as a priest, was sent to Dublin, which he hated. He became very depressed, doubted his own religious faith, even contemplated suicide, died of typhoid fever at the age of 44. During his lifetime, he had published only a handful of poems. Here's a poem for today by Robert Frost, entitled Away. Now I, out walking the world desert, and my shoe and my stocking do me no hurt. I leave behind good friends in town, let them get well wined and go lie down. Don't think I leave for the outer dark, like Adam and Eve put out of the park. Forget the myth, there is no one I am put out with or put out by. Unless I'm wrong, I but obey the urge of a song, I'm bound away. And I may return, if dissatisfied with what I learn from having died. Robert Frost's poem, Away, from Collected Poems, Prose, and Plays of Robert Frost, published by the Library of America, and used by permission on the Writer's Almanac, produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Tonight on 360 North, get 2 hours of news and Alaska weather from 6 to 8. At 8 o'clock, this week's Science for Alaska presentation is Shaking, Quaking, and Supercomputing in Alaska. And at 9, an artist turns the lens on himself in the documentary Not As I Pictured, A Photographer's Journey Through Lymphoma. Healthy Body, Healthy Mind is at 10, and This is America and the World at 10:30. Tonight on 360 North and 360North.org.
Hello and welcome back to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. I'm Joan Pardis, your Monday host. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of this live show. It is 3:24 p.m. and I just want to do a shout out. The Alaska National Guard is having its third annual reunion. It's at the ANB Hall Wednesday, July 30th, beginning at 4:30. All former and current Guard members and their families are invited. There's going to be a pig roast, steaks, drinks, and all the trimmings. Governor Sean Parnell, Juneau Mayor Merrill Sanford will be there, and other dignitaries and sponsors. So if you are a member of the Guard or have been a member of the Guard, go get your thank you. We thank you here, and they're having a party for you guys Wednesday and gals, Wednesday, July 30th, beginning at 4:30 p.m. So our next guest is Merity Davis. Hello, Merity.
Hi there.
And this is the first time we're meeting. Merity is an all-around creative person, and she's doing some art that I want to chat about. You're doing some kind of banners. Is that true?
Yeah, it's something I've been doing for a few years now. And after seeing in Mexico, they have what they call papel picado, which is tissue paper. They're connected by on a string, and so they put them up for various, fun occasions, fiesta, birthday, Christmas.
And are they kind of cut out? Or?
They're cut out, and they're made of tissue paper, so they're very light and floaty.
Uh-huh.
And they do them indoors and outdoors, very colorful and
different colors, different
motion
patterns.
Filled. Mm-hmm. Different patterns for different occasions,
mm-hmm.
which I really loved seeing them traveling in Mexico. So I thought, well, it's not rocket science. I could figure out how to do it. So I started doing them in tissue paper at first, and then I kind of morphed into something that was reusable and more suited to our wet weather.
Than a one-use banner?
Yes, yes.
So what are you using now? What's the material?
It's a specialized nylon. It took me a while to find because I wanted to find something that approximated the motion and look of tissue paper without looking vinyl, which is... In Mexico, when they're making something for reuse, the vinyl is what they use. Kind of like in a car lot, you know, that those vinyl triangles?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I want something that didn't look plasticky. So then I found this specialized vinyl, which allows me to cut into it without hemming.
And how long are the banners? Do they come all different
Usually sizes? About 10 feet in length, and usually they're about eight or nine panels long. So I have different themes. Right now I'm doing... a lot of wildlife. I kind of twisted it over to Alaskan wildlife.
That sounds wonderful. Where can we see some of this stuff? Because some of it's for sale, right?
Yeah, and I have been kind of the last few years doing it at the public market, but having to work on my packaging and presentation, I guess I would say. So I've focused on that, and now you can see them at Alaska Brewing Company downtown.
Oh.
Galdina Gunderson really was instrumental in me wrapping up my, intentions to put more energy into it. So they are down at the Alaska Brewing Company downtown. And then the Jack has them. And then the Nature Center up in the tram just ordered some.
Oh, cool.
My humpback whale ones.
Mm-hmm.
And what else? Sitka Science Center over in Sitka. And the Firewood Gallery in Gustavus.
Oh, wow. That sounds wonderful. I'll have to go check it out. It sounds like prayer flags for Alaska.
Mm. Well, they're kind of, let's say, wildlife flags, celebration flags. I do also some that are more just colorful all occasion designs. And then Dia de los Muertos, too, skeleton designs.
Wow, that sounds great. And then Jeff tells me you also do lawn ornaments.
Started doing this, what's called hyper tufa, which is a lightweight cement mixture that you can make. So it's kind of like Play-Doh for adults, or kids can do it too. But it was something that I read about, and I thought, I could mess with that. So I messed with it, and I made pots, and then I made kind of stacking Japanese lanterns. So I sold those at the Jack, during the summer, the last couple of years. But now I'm kind of twisting my focus to the banners, concentrate on the banners.
All right. And it sounds, we were talking before, everyone else was listening to Garrison and Keeler, we were chatting, and it just sounds like you kind of follow your interest and your whimsy. It's just kind of like, oh, it was lawn ornaments, and now it's banners, and you're doing a show next March at the Canvas, but you won't tell Jeff and I what you moved on to something else.
Well, it's banner related.
Okay.
But,
that's all she's saying.
I'm having some fun with it. So next March, that's what I'm doing. I I told the fellow, it's all finished in my head. But
everyone needs a deadline.
I have to produce it. But it's very fun. It's kind of lighthearted.
Sounds great. Okay. And then what about these plants? You were talking about some mossball plants?
Oh, that was another thing that I saw. My sister kind of turned me on to that, and which is kind of a Japanese plant form, kind of related to bonsai, I guess it's today. And it's a moss ball, basically. You just make a moss ball around the roots of a plant, and it looks like it's growing out of a green ball of moss.
Oh,
so we made those. Some of them were for summer, you know, just you can put any annual plant in there. And then I've made a bunch for, like, indoor use, so ivy, ferns, that kind of stuff.
It sounds lovely.
It intrigues me. Then I have to go do it, and then I'm kind of get done with it.
And you move on to the next.
The next thing.
Right. And you say it's not rocket science. It might not be rocket science for you, but for me, it's totally rocket science. So I'm going to check out the banners. And the banners are at the Alaska Brewery Depot downtown.
Uh-huh,
and the other outlets.
And then the other places are the Jack. They have a big selection of Jack. And then they have the humpback whale ones up on the tram at the Old Nature Store up there.
And then over at Gustavus.
And then if you're in Sitka, the Sitka Science Center, and I'll be over there the weekend of the 1st and 2nd of August. The Sitka Seafood Festival is happening, so I'm going to have a booth there.
That's this weekend.
Yeah.
It's almost August, I know. It's crazy. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Check out those banners.
Okay.
We'll be back with our next guest in just a moment.
This year's Bird Note. Now, we got cowboys and cowgirls, but did you know we also got cowbirds? Back in the days when the buffalo roamed, brown-headed cowbirds, looking a lot like blackbirds, but with a shiny, green-black body and that brown head they're named for, followed the buffalo herds. As the buffalo wandered across the prairies, they stirred up insects that the cowbirds ate. Since the buffalo didn't stay long in one place, the cowbirds didn't have time to build a nest and tend to the business of raising young. The birds solved that problem by laying eggs in other birds' nests and letting those other parents raise their young. Cowbird eggs often hatch before their adoptive siblings, and the young cowbirds outcompete their nestmates for food. Over the years, humans have settled just about everywhere and brought with them cows. And along came the cowbird. Now they nest in every state and across much of Canada. One female cowbird can lay up to 40 eggs in one season, usually spread over the nests of many smaller birds, including warblers, juncos, and thrushes. Some warblers are having a hard time reproducing, given all the cowbirds they end up raising. Seems the warblers have good reason for some discouraging words. I'm Cowboy Stein for Bird Note.
Hello, this is Sarah Everett. I invite you to join me as we explore four stories from the Book of Virtues on Monday, July 28th at 7 p.m. on KTOO. These are folk tales that teach moral lessons. The Book of Virtues at 7 o'clock on KTOO, Monday, July 28th.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon, live from Alaska's capital city. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. It's 3:33 p.m. I'm Joan Pardis, your Monday host, and we have a studio full of people right now. We're representing Perseverance Theater. We have Art Roach, the artistic director. We have Sylvia Kwan and Erin Tripp from their actors who are starring in Vanya, Sonia, and Masha and Spike, which I recently saw, which is really funny, and I enjoyed your performances tremendously. So let's talk Summerfest. Three plays going on at the Jack that has been totally and completely transformed to a theater. It looks great.
Well, thanks. It was a lot of work, but it's fun to see it that way. And we fit all three of them in there, so they're done in a rotating schedule. On Saturdays, you can make a day of it, see all three plays. And there's a couple more weeks to go.
Okay. So Summerfest is revolving these three plays, Warriors by Dave Hunsaker, a local writer here who's based out of Juneau, and The Blue Bear, which is written by Lynn Schooler and adapted by Leon... How do you say that?
Leon Ingelsrud and Luann Schooler, Lynn's sister, did the adaptation.
Right, and Lynn is also another local writer based in Juneau. And then Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike is a Broadway... Well, I think it received the Tony last year.
Tony Award-winning comedy.
Written by Christopher Durang, who's very funny, and it is really funny. So all those plays are happening right here at the Jack in Rapp, and any given day you could probably see a play, if not two.
Right. Every day but Wednesday. Wednesdays are the actor's day off, but most other days there's at least two, and one day a week. On Saturday there's all three. And then the closing date, which is August 6th, that's a Wednesday, there'll also be all three plays will run one more time.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So how has it been playing at the Jack, either Sylvia or Aaron, either one?
It has been just a really, really lovely experience. I'm from Los Angeles, and I found that the people in Juneau have just been so receptive and just so excited about this Summerfest, and it's just been a really great experience.
That's great. That's great. Well, welcome to Juneau.
Thank you.
It's usually a little bit drier, but here or there, give or take.
Right? A couple good days.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It doesn't matter. You're always in the black box, right? In the theater, which the Jack is not black at all. It's really beautiful and airy, and it's a great theater. It was really, I went in. And Art, did you design that? Who designed that theater?
I designed the scenery, and a friend of mine from graduate school designed the lighting for all three plays, which is quite an accomplishment. And we had one designer do the costumes. It's kind of common in summer reps, have one creative team work with all the directors and come up with a common solution. So,
right. And this is a new product for Perseverance. This is the first time you've really ventured
out to do
this.
Yeah, especially on this scale to work in the summer. And the reason for the Jack is the space to put the other sets behind the one that we're using. We couldn't really do that in the Douglas Theater, and then it makes it walking distance for people who might be staying in hotels and stuff. And we've had a nice amount of walk-up business from visitors, mostly people who are in hotels, that sort of thing. A few people off the ships, too.
And how's the local presence? When I was there, the theater was, I would say, two-thirds, if not more, full.
Yeah.
It was pretty full.
I think that's pretty typical for, and of that two-thirds, I would guess that two-thirds of that are probably local. That's been pretty typical.
We knew a lot of people in the audience.
Yeah.
A typical experience for Juneau.
Yeah. Yeah,
so,
that's right.
So, Aaron, how's your experience with it? Aaron, I don't want to give it away, but Aaron has the sight in this play.
I have a lot of visions. I won't spoil them right now. It's been great because I've done a lot of work with Perseverance already, so going from our very intimate, small space to this big thing, you just have to fill it more and be bigger. So it's been fun.
That sounds great. That sounds great. So you have only a couple of more weeks left, and if people want to find out, they should probably check out your website.
Yeah, perseverancetheater.org or ptalaska.org is the new URL that's a little easier to remember. It is ptalaska.org.
Okay.
And that'll have the Summerfest schedule and links to ticket buying and that sort of thing.
That sounds great. And then you could also buy tickets at the door.
That's right. And for the rest of the festival, all the curtain times before 6 o'clock, so the 2 o'clock, and there's one 11 o'clock on that three-show day that Saturday, also that closing Wednesday, maybe an 11 o'clock too. Those are all pay-as-you-can for locals as well.
Oh, that's great.
It's a nice deal.
That's
great.
And then also happening with Perseverance is your store, your youth program is in production.
Three plays over there too.
I saw My American My Story yesterday,
that's
and it was really wonderful.
It was
great. A small cast and very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
My type of theater. It was really thought-provoking.
Yeah,
really
that's
fun.
Really a thoughtful piece of work, and it's really engaging. The kids are great in that.
They were wonderful.
The third one, so the star plays this year, there's one more weekend for all three plays. All the performers are kids in the program. And the third one is Into the Woods Junior, and then Much Ado About Nothing, which you know well.
I do.
and My America, My Story, which is an original work that was created by the students with their instructor. It's
right.
Fabulous.
And you can check it out. And what's the season next in the fall? What's
so opening
season?
In September is a five-play season that sort of runs through May as usual. The first play is An Iliad, which is a solo version of The Iliad. So in 90 minutes, you get a version of the story. Imagine if Homer was still alive today and was sort of remembering his experience in Troy, those 40 days, the Iliad, 43 days that the Iliad describes. And then next up is Chicago, the Broadway musical, which Jonas Strausser is directing. It's a fabulous, sexy, jazzy show. And then The Mountaintop, which tells the story of the last hours in the life of Martin Luther King, imagines what might happen in his hotel room after he delivers the speech that the title refers to, the Mountaintop speech in Memphis, and before he's assassinated the next day. And then The Odd Couple, the classic comedy that inspired the television phenomenon, the original. There's several versions of the play, but the one we're doing is the original 1965 version, sort of a, think of it as a portrait of the American male 50 years ago, and it's sad to say, not that much has really changed. And then the last one is the To Be Announced will be a contemporary play, probably on the lighter side. We're still deciding what that will be and let you know in August.
That sounds great. So once again, it's Summerfest 2014 at the Jack until August 6th. There's three plays in rep. I've only seen one so far, but I'm definitely going to check out Warriors and see Blue Bear again because it's worth seeing again. And so, Sylvia, you're visiting just for Summerfest?
Yes.
Okay. And Erin, are you cast for next year already, or is not gone that far?
I'm waiting.
Well, Iliad's a one-man show, and I think it is a one-man show.
There's we'll a musician see. On stage, too. It's really beautiful. Yeah.
Okay. But who is that person?
Who's playing the poet, the storyteller, Boston Christopher.
Oh, great.
Fabulous actor, yeah.
Every time I see him, I say, you are an excellent pirate. He was wonderful as pirate. Well, anyway, thank you so much. We are so lucky here in Juneau to have this theater and this theater, such a vibrant theater company and a professional theater company. So thanks for all you do. And it's been a pleasure meeting you gals because you were wonderful in the play.
Thank you.
Check it out. Okay, next up we're going to be talking, actually Jeff Brown pre-recorded this piece. He's chatting with Laurie Craig of the Mendenhall Glacier about what's going on with the bears out there. So stay tuned.
On the phone with Laurie Craig from the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. Laurie, thanks for being on the air with me today.
Hi, Jeff, and hi, everybody out there in K2 land. We are very happy to announce that sockeye salmon have come into Steep Creek. This is an annual occurrence that everybody waits for, both the people and the bears, so we are prepared for an increase in bear activity. One of the things that we've been doing in the past several years is closing the backside of the Steep Creek Trail to give room for bears to escape. What we have learned with that is that the bears then are much more willing to be seen in the areas where the elevated platforms are located. So we end up with great bear viewing and wonderful fish for the bears to catch. And we just closed the trail when the fish came in on Saturday.
How many bears are we talking about?
You know, it's really hard for us to keep track of them as individuals because they all look pretty much the same. These are beautiful and handsome black bears of varying ages, anywhere from year-and-a-half-year-olds up to, we've had bears in the 20s. They all look remarkably similar. Sometimes it's easy to keep track of the ones that are moms with little cubs, but we can only keep track of them for about a year or so, and then those cubs grow up and go on their own. We think we have an average of 15 to 18 individual bears every summer, and we do try to keep track of them so that we can get a profile of who they are and their behavior. That helps us figure out how we can work with them to ensure that they get what they need in the way of their wild foods and that people have a chance to see them. And it's a very delicate situation to try to let wild bears go about their normal feeding behaviors without interfering with them, but it gives us a great opportunity to have wonderful bear viewing, and that's what we try to do for visitors and locals as well.
What do you think is the best day to come in?
We often get asked that question about what's the best day, what's the best time.
And when do the bears clock in?
I wish I knew. We actually did do a study to figure out if there were males and females here at different times, thinking that maybe when it was quiet the males would come. And it turned out that we have only female bears during the summertime when we did our study in 2008. And that's not totally unusual. People have found that in areas where there are a lot of humans around, that sometimes the mother bears come with their cubs because the people provide a little bit more protection from male bears who could be threatening. What we've noticed over the years is that the bears are actually a little more sensitive and more cautious around other bears than they are around people if they have learned where they can be safe. So the elevator platforms is the key area where they know that people aren't going to yell at them, they're not going to throw anything, they're not going to have food, they're just going to stand very quietly and watch them, which of course is exactly what we want to get, is that same opportunity to watch a bear who's not distracted by us and is behaving normally and naturally, because the bears have all the wild food they need, whether it's fish or plants or berries. As a matter of fact, they have one of the best diets that anybody could have.
I was counting the cruise ships yesterday. There were five yesterday, and it seems like there's five today. What day is the best day to go to avoid the numbers of people there?
Well, Monday afternoons are the most crucial to avoid if you have that choice. Monday mornings, on the other hand, are very quiet. And that's because the cruise ships on Monday afternoon all come in at midday, and it's very concentrated in the afternoon and very congested. So I recommend, if you want to be here when it's quiet, Monday morning is absolutely delightful. And, of course, evenings are nice as well. But we still ask people, don't bring your coffee, don't bring your sandwiches, no picnics out here, please, because we want to continue to be able to watch the bears. And the most important thing to keep bears wild and people safe is to keep human food away from them, whether it's garbage or picnics or just crumbs.
I remember when you were talking to you, you told me that you had to stop some people from having a barbecue out there in the parking lot.
Yes, and that happens amazingly frequently. We watch some people set up a really nice breakfast with bacon sizzling in the pan, and we had to tell them, I'm sorry, you can't do that here. And we live very closely with bears in Juneau as a community, but here at the visitor center, we do so even more, and that's because that creek, which is only about a mile long where we've got sockeye salmon in it, is such an attraction for wild food for wild bears, and we want to keep it that way. So they have to walk right through the middle of us, and so we try really hard to make it work for wild ones and people. And most of the time we're finding we get just great help from the locals as they're realizing that this is something that they enjoy too, and being safe, they're much more willing to be kind of, you know, our joint stewards on this, to make it work for everybody.
Lori, how often do you have to close the gates on the covered on the walking platforms?
You know, the platforms are open. The backside of the trail where it's brushy and there's no platforms to speak of, we close that every summer when the sockeye come in. And we've learned through experience that that's the smartest thing to do, because sometimes people get trapped back in a section where they can't see where they're going, and bears are very close, and we've had some unfortunate incidents. No one's been hurt, but we want to be sure that that doesn't happen. And so we found the best thing to do is to close the backside where it's thick in the brush. The bears like that, the people don't. And what that does is it gives the bears a chance to come out where we can see them. It's turned out to be a wonderful improvement for bear watching.
And the bears are smiling, taking pictures and everything?
No, they ignore us, and that's exactly what we want them to do. We want them to see us as benign and predictable, that we just behave the same way every time. So we ask people to be kind of quiet and move slowly so that that's what the bears are used to. They say, oh, well, you know, here's people again. They're standing over us, but we can go ahead and eat our fish and tussle over things with my fellow cub. That's what we hope the bears are thinking, is that they are in a place where they are safe and that they can just be wild bears.
And how are you doing after being exposed to the stars of the Today Show?
It was a very interesting few days. It was very exciting. We had lots of people here for the Today Show. They were just great. And, of course, the Yokolup started while the Today Show was here, but the effects weren't seen until the next day. And, of course, the flooding continued for a couple days after that because we had a lot of rain. So we feel like we've had a very busy summer so far. And we've all been looking forward to when the fish come back, because they are so beautiful, these bright red sockeye salmon. They are in the stream, not in big numbers yet, but we anticipate the return of some of our favorite bears. One of our favorite bears came through here on Thursday with one little cub. And so we just want to be sure that we live well and coexist well with our wild neighbors.
And a reminder that bears don't like to be anthropomorphized because they don't like it.
Well, we try not to do that. We try to be sure that we can convey to people the important message that these are wild animals and that they have everything that they need to live in the forest. And we just need to be as careful as we can to respect that. And I think that's probably the basic word, is if you think of respect, how you respect each other, how you respect wildlife, that should be a good guidance. And, but we always help, you know, no food while you're out here, be quiet, move slowly, and we try to have rangers or volunteers on site whenever we've got the bears here so that we can ensure that everybody is the same way every day so that the bears can be calm.
And for people who like to watch fish, there's the fish cam that's operating now.
Yes, the fish cam is wonderful, isn't it? And then we also have a rooftop cam from the visitor center, so I like to think of it as the iceberg cam. So you can go onto this website, and I will get you the website if I haven't done that yet, and you can see the photo that is current, and it changes like every 5 minutes. But if you go down a little farther, you can click on a video from the previous 24 hours. And what that lets you see is these icebergs are anything but still. They are moving around this lake just like those little creatures you see when the tide goes out. They're scooting all over the place, and we've got one big iceberg that's a very distinctive one because it's got a lot of sediment on it. And it's in front of the glacier one day, and then the next day it's way over to the east, and then the next day it's over to the west. And if we didn't have that video, we wouldn't be able to know how much these icebergs travel. And they're big, so they're traveling on the currents, which, of course, we can't really see, but that's an indicator of what's going on, is those bergs move around a lot.
And there's a link to that on the Glacier Visitor Center website?
There should be, yes.
All right, Lori Craig from the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center, thank you so much for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add that I might have forgotten to ask?
Oh, just that we love having people visit us, and we're very happy to be a part of the community, and we want people to enjoy their time out here at the Visitor Center. So thank you for the opportunity to share some of the fun news.
One more question. What are the hours?
The Visitor Center itself is open from 8 in the morning till 7:30 in the evening. And you can be on site from 6 in the morning till midnight. And it's closed from midnight till 6 a.m.
All right, Lori, thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeff. Bye.
There's a husky, dusky maiden in the Arctic. In her igloo she waits for me in vain. Oh, I think I'll put my mucklucks on and ask her if she'll wed me when the ice worms nest again. In the land of the pale blue snow, where it's 99 below, and the polar bears are roaming o'er the plain. In the shadow of the pole, I will clasp her to my soul. We'll be happy when the ice worms nest again. For our wedding feast, we'll have seal oil and blubber. In our kayak we will roam the bounding main. She will sit there eating muktuk, but I'll love her. We'll be happy when the ice worms nest again. Then one night at 2:30, coming back to my igloo, and I've had enough Makula now for 10. She'll be waiting for me there with the jawbone of a bear, and she'll beat me till the ice worms nest again. In the land of the pale blue snow, where it's 99 below, and the polar bears are roaming o'er the plain. In the shadow of the pole, I will clasp her to my soul. We'll be happy when the ice worms nest again. The day is coming near when a fishing I will hear. All the walruses now click their teeth with joy. With her hooligan and shaw, she'll be waiting at the door, and she'll greet me with a bouncing baby boy. In the land of the pale blue snow, where it's 99 below, and the polar bears are roaming o'er the plain. In the shadow of the pole, I will clasp her to my soul. We'll be happy when the ice worms nest again.
It's 3:53 p.m. It's 3:53 p.m. and it's raining in Juneau. So tonight, rain, lows around 53, light winds becoming southeast, 10 miles per hour late. Tomorrow, rain, highs around 61, light winds becoming southeast, 10 miles per hour in the afternoon. Tomorrow night, showers likely, lows around 53, southeast wind 10 miles per hour in the evening, becoming light and variable. Wednesday, showers likely, highs around 61, light winds, and Wednesday night, decreasing clouds, slight chance of showers, lows 47 to 52, light winds, and then it looks like it is partly cloudy for the rest of the week. Right now, Juneau Airport, it's 53 degrees. Downtown Juneau, it's 54 degrees. And in the Mendenhall Valley, it is 50 degrees. Thank you for spending your afternoon with us at Juneau Afternoon. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. If you're interested to come on the show as a guest, drop him a line. Call KTOO or search out the KTOO's presence on the web, which is really quite formidable. And if you ever want to listen to a Juneau Afternoon or any other KTOO content, you could do that at your will at ktoo.org. And then tomorrow, Ken Fix is the host. He'll be talking with Brian Hulst from JEDC, the Juneau Economic Development Council, about the 2014 Storefront Stars. He'll also chat with someone from the Sitka's Home Skillet Festival. All that and more tomorrow at 3 with Ken Fix. Thanks for joining us on KTOO News at Juneau Afternoon. It is 3:55 p.m.
Don't miss a free public workshop about housing and services for Juneau seniors. Tuesday, July 29th, 6 to 9 p.m. at Centennial Hall. Hear about a major demand study. Participate in interactive discussion. Advise on senior solutions. Contribute your ideas and concerns. And learn how you can help bring